Hey, this is Bootstrap Web, episode 89, and we're back for another episode here. As always, I'm Brian.
And I'm Jordan. Nice to speak with you again.
Cool. So we're going to get right into a topic for this week. Last week, you had our updates, and we'll give you the next update next week. But for now, we're going to get right into a couple of listener questions. We've got about two that we're going to tackle today. Yes. The first one we put out on Twitter today, that came from Conrado Maggie. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He said, you know, lately a lot of SaaS are focusing on outbound sales. How is that working out for Carthook? And what about the inbound long-term play? How does that balance out? And this is a good question. I mean, I definitely, you know, want to hear how it's happening in Carthook. I mentioned last week that I've just recently put this stuff in place in terms of like cold outbound sales for audience ops. So I've got a, you know, I can kind of talk through the systems and tools that I put in place. And actually I want to get your take on what I put in place, because I know you have much more experience in this sort of thing than I do. So.
Yeah. And I always have plenty to learn from what other people are doing too. Yeah. It's so when I first read that question, what I thought he meant was, I'm seeing a lot of SaaS companies come out that enable outbound sales, because that's true. You just see a lot of tools coming out. Outreach.io, LeadFuse came out with their own software, SalesLoft, QuickMail, just SendBloom, all these tools that enable it because it's getting more and more popular.
I don't think that's
what he meant, but it's interesting to see the ecosystem kind of grow around a strategy.
It is, and I think that goes to show how much of it is a strategy that's growing, because you think of a SaaS, like traditionally, I think what has made it so attractive to so many people is like, hey, you build this SaaS, customers will naturally come find it and magically just become customers and stay subscribed month after month, recurring revenue, all that. And you don't have to do any work to get the customer. And
right. You build a nice looking site and maybe you get some leads, that sort of thing, but you don't have to push outward.
Yeah.
Right. And content marketing went along with that and the popularity of it. And then I think what happened was the dirty secret kind of came out, that a lot of these unbelievably successful SaaS companies in Silicon Valley are all doing outbound sales, from Salesforce to Zenefits to all these incredibly successful companies. They all have in-house sales teams doing outbound sales.
Yeah.
And so I think what happened is it started to become more popular. Aaron Ross wrote his book on predictable revenue, and Brian Kreutzberger gets popular with his breakthrough email, and you hear some interviews and you're like, oh shit, this works. So now the challenge is that you can make this work. You can make the math work for outbound sales if you're selling a high-priced enterprise software. If your average contract value per year is $20,000 and up, you can hire high-quality salespeople to run this process and be profitable while paying them $100,000 a year. The challenge comes in, how the hell do you make the math work if you're selling something for 50 or 100 bucks a month? And that's what everyone has been trying to figure out. And that's what all these tools are coming in, and you have to make it more scalable.
You can make it more automated. I mean, I've also noticed just in my email inbox getting way more cold emails from companies than I used to.
I love it.
Yeah.
I have a Gmail tag where I'm like, cold email templates. And I always respond.
Nice.
And I'm like, not interested, but I like this part, or I don't like this part of your template. You know, keep up the good work.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes I don't, and I know that like if I reply like not interested or whatever, then I know that that's going to like shut off the cold email sequence, because that's how these tools work. They track the replies and then they won't. So sometimes I'll look at the emails and I won't reply because I want to see what all three of them look like, you know?
Yes. But they'll know that it was opened, and yes. Sometimes you'll get a phone call because it was opened, which is, that's part of what we do as a process. Yeah. It's very cool.
Interesting.
Cool. So,
well, the other part of his question here was, you know, what about inbound as more of a long-term play? And I think that's right. You know, the thing about outbound sales is I feel like they can't work just alone on their own. Like you shouldn't necessarily only do cold outreach as a sales process and not do anything else, like build up content marketing assets over the long term.
Paid advertising,
Email marketing. I mean, inbound, like email automation kind of stuff.
Right. It needs to contribute, but it does shorten the response time. It's the quickest time to a response.
Exactly. And the thing with doing the inbound stuff, he's right. It is more long term. So you should start doing that stuff from day one, but you're not going to get results as fast as you need them to be, especially if you're bootstrapping the startup from day one. So that's where the combination of cold email outreach with the content stuff comes into play, because you know that's why this whole idea of cold outreach I think has become so popular lately, is because all these startups or these SaaS they're growing. You know, you can use organic search and content and inbound things and even like ads to get a couple of customers in every month, but it's not enough to sustain. It's not enough to either pay the founder what they need to live or get a team in place so that you can move faster. You don't reach that velocity that you need to really grow the SaaS. And that's why SaaS burns out. So that's when, you know, becoming more proactive comes into play to kind of get to that point where it all starts really working together.
Yeah, it contributes. And I think it's something that's worth a try, because if it does work for you, you have found a channel that can kind of keep running and keep contributing over time. So organic, paid, and outbound, it's just another channel that might be able to contribute. And if you can get it to contribute profitably, then you should have it running.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what our mix looks like now. It's a piece. When we first started Cardhook, the only channel we had was outbound cold email, because it was the fastest way to just talk to people and see if anyone cares at all about what we built.
Yeah.
And then as soon as that started to work, we tried to double down on it, and then we tried to experiment with it, and then it didn't work as well as it did in the beginning. And that's when we start diversifying. Like, okay, now let's do paid advertising, now let's do Facebook ads, and now let's do partnerships and new integrations, and then it becomes one part of the whole as opposed to the only strategy. Look, there are companies that use it as their 90% strategy, and hallelujah, I would love to have a company like that, because that sounds very attractive. People just put money into a machine that turns out more money than you put in, but it's not an easy thing to do.
And this gets to a question that I actually asked you last week about cold email outreach, because I was putting my systems together. What I learned as I started researching all these different tools and services, there are basically two strategies to get at this. If you know that you want to do cold email outreach to some prospects for your business, there are two ways to go about it. One way is to be like kind of like a blanket approach, thousands of names in a list, and just, you know, put them into a system where you're cold email outreach. And the other way is a little bit more targeted, where you're kind of more manually building prospect lists and sending that out. And so when I was going through this for audience ops, I kind of landed on the latter, where I feel like I need to get a more targeted list, almost hand-picked list, because I can't just necessarily go to something like builtwith.com and get all sites that use Kissmetrics or all sites that have Google Analytics installed or whatever, because, you know, that's just so many different types of websites and businesses, and you can look at different tools and things that might relate to a characteristic of your customer. But like for us, we work best with B2B online businesses, like software products that are serving businesses. You know, so if you do one of these like automated prospecting lists, either buying a big list or doing one of these like scrapers where you just let it go out on the internet and get tons and tons of names, you know, it's going to send a lot of kind of cold emails to people that I wouldn't necessarily even accept them as a client, because they wouldn't really fit for us.
Right. And that's a dangerous thing in an environment where time is a valuable resource. Because we've done that before. We started sending and getting good responses, and we got all excited. And then when we get people on a demo or in a conversation, we realize this is a bad prospect. Now we're spending time emailing with them, scheduling, doing a demo, and then worst of all, if they create a free trial, we're wasting time with onboarding and working and answering questions, and then they don't convert to a customer. It's a complete disaster all the way around.
Right. Right. So, I mean, if you want, like, I can go through the system that I just finished putting together for Audience Ops. It's now running for us, and maybe you can kind of help me tear it apart and see what I did wrong.
Sure. I mean, what you're talking about right now is the first piece. You need some raw material. You need people to contact. And like you said, you can go a mass approach, or you can go a hand-picked approach, you know, or you can experiment with both. We experiment with both. We have like a high value version that we handpick, and we have like a giant list that we blast.
Yeah. Well, I guess now we're doing, I think in the very beginning when I did it as a test, I just manually did the cold email myself from my own Gmail account. I picked, I think, something like 10 or 20 companies, like software companies that sell to businesses. And I personally sent, you know, a canned email to all 20 of them. And I got a good response from one who's turning into a pretty good lead for us. But then I kind of went the next step to get it all put into a system. And this is where it gets a little bit less targeted, but it's still not that massive blanket approach. So basically what we're doing now is I'm using either a combination of Wikipedia or the site Capterra. Are you familiar with that? Which kind of gives you lists. It helps you compare different software tools for your business. So you can literally just write in like project management tools and it'll spit out like 200 project management tools.
Oh, okay. I have seen that.
And it's like perfect. I can just give my VA that category page on Capterra for project management tools or help desk tools or, you know, something like that, that like tools that I know serve businesses. Then I have him get all those names and he puts them into a spreadsheet, and he basically visits the website for each of those companies, finds out who the CEO, who the founder is of each company. You know, he'll manually go look at their about page or something. If he can't find it, then he'll look them up on like Crunchbase. Usually that works, or he'll just Google them, put them in the spreadsheet, first name, last name, company name. And then I'm using our friend Justin's LeadFuse tool. Now LeadFuse has been a done for you service, but now they've actually released a software tool that lets you do your own prospecting. And their tool is good for if you want to go out on like on a Google search or go into LinkedIn and you can find the contact info for people off of a search results page. But what you can also do, I use it a little bit differently than what most of their clients do. I actually load in our spreadsheet of names. They allow you to load in your own names into LeadFuse. So I load in a CSV, or well, my VA is doing this now. He loads in a CSV that has company name, first name, and last name. And then LeadFuse does the work of digging out that person's personal email address.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And now granted, if you put in 100 names, it's really only going to come back with about 30 good email addresses. The rest will be kind of not found or, you know, unverified email addresses or whatever.
Yep.
So, you know, for every 100 names, we get 30 good email addresses, and that's fine. So
yeah, it's as good as you can expect.
Yeah. And so if I have the VA do a couple hundred of these companies every week or two, then we build a list of, you know, enough cold emails to fill up our emailing system. So the next step after that is he takes the names that we've found email addresses for, he takes them out of LeadFuse, puts them into another spreadsheet, a Google spreadsheet, which then syncs with, we're using quickmail.io.
Right. And I know Justin eventually with LeadFuse will have an emailing component. So yes, it'll cut that out. But right now, right, you have to email it in a different way. So you're using Quickmail, which I like.
Yeah. So we're using Quickmail. And what I like about it is that it actually pulls all the names. It syncs up with a Google spreadsheet. So all my VA has to do is update a spreadsheet, and those get synced into Google, into Quickmail. And then what Quickmail does is basically like you set up email templates. So I've set up like a sequence of three email templates that get sent out to these prospects. There's like a 3-day period in between each one. And what Quickmail does, and just like a lot of these other tools like SalesLoft and, you know, some of these other ones, if the person, it basically tracks if the person has replied or if they open it or if they click a link inside the email. And if they have replied, then it would stop the follow-up email sequence. And then there's an automation in place so that, you know, we're constantly refreshing our list of prospects thanks to the work that my VA does from week to week. And then the automation that happens is like every day, take 10 new prospects from the list and send the cold email. So we're basically just sending 10 a day.
Right. You want your resource of emails to be infinite. You don't ever want the sending to catch up with your research. So right. that just stays ahead of things, and you could just keep blasting your 10, 20, 50 a day, and just that basically goes on forever. So research is like inexhaustible, and then you have a consistent flow going out of new initial contacts. And of course, there's always the follow-ups going out every day, but that's automated.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The other thing, and these are kind of tips that I picked up from Justin. It's kind of handy being in a mastermind with someone who does cold email outreach for a living. So I'm not using my main email address. I actually opened up a second domain email address. It's pretty similar to audienceops.com, but it's not quite. So I set up that email address just for cold email outreach, and then I forward incoming emails to that email address to my main one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, allows my main domain to avoid being like dinged by the mail gods, I guess.
Yes. the Googlers.
Yep. The other tip that I got from Justin is that you have to include, this is at least in the US, this might not apply in other countries, but in the US you have to include your mailing address and I think your phone number in the content of the email that you send out. I think in order for it to not be marked as spam.
I'm not sure about that, but Just knows more about that than I do.
Yeah. I don't know. That's what I heard from him. I think he has an article on his blog. Maybe we can dig that up and put it in the show notes.
Right. It might be, that might just be the safer, smarter way to go. Yeah. And we include it in our signature block as a trust builder. So like the signature block isn't just like a name, that it looks like a more established company information and address and all that.
And that's exactly how I did it. And I actually, you know, I got my signature all together. It looks pretty good, I think, because it is very personal. It says, you know, Brian Castle. I even put like a small avatar of my face in the signature. It says like Brian Castle, founder of Audience Ops. So you're getting an email from a founder, not some sales rep. It's got office address, and then I put cell phone and it's my actual cell phone number. And then a link to my LinkedIn page and a link to my personal Twitter account. And so that's the signature. And I think that helps it, you know, look kind of more personal because it is.
Yeah. I think it's worth testing, you know, a great cold email that I received myself recently, just had no links whatsoever. No links. No links to the company, no links to the person, just the signature block and phone number. So you could call them or reply to the email and that's it. And I was like, that's interesting. That's worth testing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And you know, the other tip that I got, you know, when I ran these email templates by my mastermind, as I went through and kind of edited the different versions of the email templates is I'm not in the email I'm sending, I'm not saying like, hey, let's hop on a consultation call so I can sell you audience ops. I'm basically phrasing it more as a question, like how are you handling your blogging right now? Or do you feel like you're publishing enough content on your blog? Or is that a big burden for you? Because that's what I found for my clients is that like we're easing that's the pain that we're solving, right? So I'm trying to just start a conversation about that. And then I'll say something like, hey, I'd love to share a few ideas for what you can do at your company, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We do something similar. And then in the second email, we just share the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. But everything's worth testing. Like just reply with a yes or no. That's worth testing. Open-ended question. That's worth testing. Here's my calendar, a link directly. It's all kind of experimentation. It's like ad copy. Like you're not going to get it right on the first try. You have to experiment.
Yeah. So what are you guys doing now in terms of cold email outreach? I mean, I know you did a lot early on, and how has it like evolved now that you're, you know, like over a year into it?
Yeah, it's been tricky because there are a few different variables. And the biggest variable for us is who we're sending to. So what we found was that we got great response rate from a from lower quality e-commerce platform users. So it felt amazing to get a response. And then we said to ourselves, oh man, if we get the same type of response for this other platform, it's going to be amazing. We started sending to them and got no response. So all of a sudden you start to realize, okay, this is a bigger challenge than just like, just blast out emails. So we've been tweaking all the different elements, who we send to, what we say to them. So now at this point, we have several things going. We use Justin at LeadFuse for the Done For You service. And I try not to be a control freak about like the copy, because I just say, you know what, let me just let them run the experiment. Because we have another experiment going internally. So LeadFuse is sending out their version of our copy, which is different from what I would do, but I'm happy that someone else is trying something different. And they're going out to one platform. And then internally, we have our salesperson using SalesLoft, which is semi-automated. It's like, oh, here are today's 50 emails. Do you want to send them? And then you click a button and it gets sent to those 50. But it takes a person saying, yes, I'm ready to send those 50. So it's the semi-automated thing. And the reason for that is because it helps you inject phone calls into the process. And we used to email and call everyone. Now we only call people who open the email to try to reduce just the amount of work that needs to be done.
So you're digging up their phone number too?
Yes. Yes. So it takes a little more research.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're using that process to a different e-commerce platform, and then
Other nice thing about, like, it goes back to that question of like, do you want to go broad and use a service like LeadFuse, or go a little bit more targeted? I think that this is kind of like the difference between a pure SaaS software, especially one like yours, which specifically caters to certain e-commerce platforms.
Right.
You can literally say, like, find me a list of all people who use Shopify or people who use whatever.
Right.
In my case, with a productized service, I would say in general, you do kind of want to go a little bit more targeted, because productized services are so focused on a certain profile. And usually there are a number of different characteristics and some variables that make them not such a good fit.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you have it right. And the truth is, I think that's also right for us. It's just that I think the goal, both for your situation and for mine, is to identify what those perfect characteristics are. So then you can narrow and narrow and narrow to the right prospects. Because if you're sending to the wrong prospects, you might be discouraged by the response, but it might not actually be the fault of like what you're saying and what you're offering. It might just be the fault of sending it to the wrong people. So those two have to line up.
Yeah.
So what we always look for, and now that we have more of a sense of, you know what, our perfect customer isn't what we initially thought. The person that responds most is on this type of platform and spending this much money on AdWords and making this much money in revenue. And now how do we find more like that? And now we're getting into the next phase where now I'm starting to be willing to pay more money for better information. So there's a service out of Denmark called PipeTop. And they're pretty focused on e-commerce, and they just have great data. So they have that data. How much is the estimated AdWords spend? What e-commerce platform are they on? How many employees do they have? So now that we have a better sense of who our target customer is, and I imagine, you know, then we can basically stop sending out 50 or 100 a day, because we know out of those 100 that we're sending, we don't actually want to talk to 80 of them. So it's that process. And I think you'll find the same thing. I like the way you're going about it by saying, you know what, no, let's actually start smaller and send to 10 people a day, but have a better fix on who we're trying to go after. Yeah. And once you really find out, you know what, SaaS, B2B in this particular market, that's our bread and butter. That's who we want to go after. And then you have your much better target list.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing that I'd add in here is that in our third email, I'm actually linking to a blog post that I wrote.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, like, oh, and by the way, you know, here's a blog post about building a blogging strategy or something like that. You know, hope it helps.
Yeah.
You know, so like, even if like the goal is just to kind of touch base and let them know that we exist. You know, they may not be the thing about cold email outreach is that, and the difference between this versus inbound is inbound, the great thing is that they are in a mode of looking for a solution to a certain problem right now.
Right. That's ideal.
It's ideal. Like they set some kind of priority internally, like, okay, we need a marketing service, or we need a card abandonment service.
Right. Or I'm looking for a blog writer, and then they come across your thing and like, ooh, yeah. I don't just want a blog writer. I want someone to handle the whole thing.
Yeah. And you know, with cold email, it's something they might be a perfectly ideal client, and they might even know that this is a need and we're probably a good fit, but they're busy rewriting their software this month, or they're busy doing some other thing. And it's, you know, so.
Right. So it's a different mindset.
Like, yeah, exactly.
In that scenario, what do you need to do then with cold email? You need to flick the pain.
Yeah.
You can't, when someone's inbound, they're going to compare you and other competitors, and you're going to say, here's why we are better. When you're outbound, it's different. When you're outbound isn't this bothering you right here? Because it sucks and we've solved it. So it's a very different mindset.
Yeah. And that's like the first question that I ask in the first email is like something to the effect of, you know, do you feel like you're publishing enough blog content right now for your company blog?
Right. There you go. You perfect. Know? Kick the knee, man.
but still, like, even if like I've already had a reply to one of these cold email outreach today. And he was like, you know, looks like an interesting service. I'll keep it in mind. You know, I mean, from there, I do a little bit of follow up and try to get on a call, but it's, you know, now he knows we exist. He's probably not.
That's good. That's good.
Going to buy it today, but he knows we exist. And that's, you know, right. That's kind of the point of all this.
Yeah. And I love the strategy. We do the same thing of putting in links. So we do it in the PS. We do PS. Our founder recently did an interview about optimizing your e-commerce store. You think you might find it valuable. So we do both. We link out to a different site, not our own site, as almost like, we're not being self-serving. This is just value.
Right.
But it's an interview of me on video with the person interviewing me. And if I can get them to watch my face and listen to my voice, think about how much more likely they are to want to talk. Right. Yeah, that's that part of the strategy. And then the last part, the part I love about this blog post, you can then retarget. So they hit your blog post and then bang, they're on your retargeting list. All of a sudden you have a bigger, you know, bigger audience to serve ads to. Yeah. I love this shit. The thing that drives me nuts is I love the position you're in because you want to sell a higher value, higher cost product or service because it makes the math easier. Right now, I can't hire an experienced salesperson, pay them $100,000 a year because our average contract value is just not enough to justify it to pay them. If you're selling a service that costs $1,000 or $2,000 a month, so your average lifetime value is somewhere closer to $15,000 to $20,000, all of a sudden you can give that guy, you know, or gal a lot more money, a lot more incentive. And then, you know, to have a smart, energetic person running this process, it's not that it's foolproof. It's that it's much more likely to succeed.
Exactly. Exactly. And actually, I don't know if you still want to talk about affiliates, because this actually ties right into something that's kind of been on my mind lately. And like you said, like with Audience Ops, we have a pretty high price point now, especially compared to my last business. And so we can pay out a pretty nice commission if we were to have some sort of affiliate program for Audience Ops. You know, we can, or even, you know, hire a salesperson to just do sales all the time and be fully commission based. That can really work well for us. And it's something that I might explore, you know, sometime down the road. In my last business, I definitely ran into that as a challenge with salespeople, you know, because it was a much lower price point. And with a SaaS, it's, you know, if it's going to be commission based, then, you know, you've got to be able to pay a decent commission for it to be worth their time. And then same deal with the affiliate program on that SaaS. Like, we had one, but, you know, it people ask for like a recurring commission, but when you're charging $49 to $99 a month, even like 20% commission is like not anything special. So how are you facing that with affiliate programs right now?
So the affiliate thing is look, I don't expect it to transform the business. At least that's not my expectations going in. It's not like, oh, I'm going to sign up a million affiliates and everyone's going to promote for me. And I'm not going with that mindset or that approach. I just think it's time for us to, everything I do in this business is based on making people money, right? Like the whole thing, you want to recover abandoned carts so that you make more money. And then I want to charge you based on how much money I'm making you. And it's all kind of this very win-win-win scenario. So right. I've had other people ask me, do you have an affiliate program before? And I just am starting to see the light where it might be easier to push if it came along with an affiliate commission. So I have people reach out from time to time saying, this looks awesome. I would love to show it to my customers, my audience, my clients. What do you think? So my thinking on the affiliate thing isn't, there are a bunch of affiliate networks and you can go on there and then hope that affiliates sign up for your program and then you help them promote it. I don't think that that's going to work. I think the much more likely thing is, like right now I have a partnership going with a woman in the UK. She has a pretty big e-commerce audience, and I want to do a joint webinar where she emails out her list, and then I do all the work for the webinar, and then she makes a recurring commission based on the number of people that sign up for Carta through the webinar. So I see that as like, that's more realistic. Personal relationships with individual people, and then say, this is awesome, and I'm very appreciative, and I want you to do well off of it, and I will do all the work. And you provide the audience and we'll both make money.
Yeah.
So I see that as the much more realistic path for affiliates as opposed to just I'll create a program and then everyone will sign up and everyone's going to put a banner ad on 5 million sites. And then all of a sudden, magically, I'm going to get people and I'll never talk to the affiliate. And I don't think that's realistic. Yeah. So I signed up for a software called Lead Dino. And the reason for that is because they allow you to do the two things that I want to do. The first thing, what we just talked about, someone signs up, they get 30% of recurring revenue for anyone that signs up for Carthook. And I think that's a good, healthy, attractive place to start. I don't know if I'm going to stick with that, but that's my thinking. And then the second part is that they allow your existing customers to refer people and then get credit.
Gotcha. That's cool. When I looked for different services for this a couple of years ago, I found it very, the options were pretty limited, especially those that integrate with Stripe. Does that integrate with your Stripe subscriptions?
It does.
Nice.
It does. So for both purposes, right? It tracks this email that came in through this affiliate is now an email in Stripe, and therefore how much money got charged in Stripe, therefore how much money is owed to this person. So it does that. And also does, this person is a customer of yours in Stripe and you just gave them a credit of $20. So give them a credit of $20 in Stripe. Of course, I'm just starting this. I just started this week. So I might be talking out of my ass a little bit, but this is my understanding as of now, and I can definitely report back. So now we're trying to incentivize our customers also to refer other people. So we send out a monthly email basically saying, here are your results from Carthook for the past month. Here's how many abandoned carts you had, recovered carts, how much money you recovered. And so along with each of those emails, we're going to include an easy social share thing that says, I recovered $19,000 with Carthook last month. Sign up today and then give them an incentive for promoting that.
Nice. It's kind of viral. There's also an incentive there. It's awesome.
Right. It's capitalizing off of goodwill at the right time. So whatever it is, it's worth the experiment.
Yeah, totally.
Right. If it nudges things up and contributes another few customers a month, then it's worth it. The real thing that's been bothering me lately is linear growth, that we're basically growing at the same rate and there is no exponential factor. There's no building on top and rolling on top of itself. And it's starting to bother me where I feel like if I do a webinar with this woman in the UK and I do a webinar to 30 or 40 people, I can get 5 to 10 people sign up at once. And I can do that once a week forever. And those are just bigger pops than the, few trials a day.
Yeah. But if those webinars are completely based on biz dev relationships, then that's not quite as scalable, right? Like you can only have a good partner a couple times a year for that.
Yeah, I think it depends. There are a lot of people out there.
I mean, you can certainly put a webinar into the sequence of your email subscribers. So all email subscribers get on your monthly webinar, you know, or get pitched to your monthly webinar, and that might convert really well. But then you go to the big names to do these partnerships, and there are a couple of big names which you can do, you know, once or twice, and maybe do it repeating, you know, a few times a year. Which would be great. I mean, it's certainly worth the investment in time and effort, but it's not exactly like do it every week.
I don't know yet. I know the guy from Lead Pages does like 10 webinars a week, and most of those are not for the Lead Pages audience, that for other people's audience that they're paying an affiliate fee for.
Okay.
Right. Nice. Look, there are a lot of different people with a lot of different lists.
I guess you are working in a world like the e-commerce world is so big that
it's really big.
There are, you know,
So cool. It's worth
the other thing on affiliates, the other quick note on affiliates is like, if you're selling an info product, using Gumroad finally released an affiliate system within their system about a month or two ago. So people have been asking me for affiliate links for the productized course since the beginning, and I've just been way too lazy to set up some third party affiliate system, and I just never got around to it. And then finally Gumroad sends me an email and says, we now have an affiliate program. So
nice.
So I have offered existing productized members to become affiliates and recommended to other students, and a bunch have done that. And now I'm kind of personally handing out affiliate invites to people who get in touch with me and want to kind of, you know, promote the productized course. That's just so easy because it's like all built into Gumroad and I don't have to think about any of it. Gumroad just sends the commission and it just works.
Nice, man.
Yeah. Cool. So should we wrap it up for this one, and we'll get back to it next week?
I think so. Yeah. Well, yeah. Busy day today. Our first experiment in recording multiple episodes.
Exactly.
Cool, man. Well, look, it's great talking with you. Everyone listening out there, thank you very much for listening. Send in your reader questions. We're going to do more of these like topical episodes, I guess.
Exactly.
When they're driven by questions from people in the audience, that's the best.
Totally. So send them in. You can go to bootstrappedweb.com/ask to send us kind of a longer email if you want, or just tweet at us, you know, CastJam or Jordan Gal on Twitter, and we'll monitor those and get these topics out there on the show.
Sounds good, man. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too, man. See ya.
See ya.